Absolutely. I mean, the sun, the weather is being nice to those in the Washington area. This is like Annie. The sun will come out tomorrow.
Uh-huh.
It has come out. Yeah, that's got to have been a rough period for people, because are you essential or are you excluded or not? Are you in? Are you out? Are you going to get paid? Maybe not this time. The language that was used, the late night talk show hosts saying things about it. And I noticed even the NPR Garrison Keillor show the other night had some, they were supposed to be funny, but some snide remarks about who were essential federal workers and who weren't.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it's got to be a relief.
Yeah. There are some lessons to be learned here, for sure. We'll talk later on in the program about the fights that are upcoming. This is certainly not the last one. But you would think, I guess, after being in CRs year after year after year recently, that the folks that listen to us would be making provisions for such a thing. But the feedback that you and I both heard coming out of this was there are a lot of folks that were going, hey, wait a minute. It was like this never occurred to them, the possibility the government could shut down.
Yeah, I feel that way about winter. The first nice warm day, I forget everything about the cold. Otherwise, I think we'd all move away, or many of us would move away. And telling working people that you should have 6 to 9 months of expenses in cash ready to go, that's a lot easier said than done.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not sure I know many people that do that, including myself. You try, but, you said there are lessons learned. What are they? tell me.
Well, it seems to me that the lesson that I would take away from this is be prepared, because this could happen again.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's true. That's true. You know, other people have mentioned this, and I think a factor that is present, will continue for a long time, that wasn't around as much in the 95-96 shutdown, is the, I think the outright hatred and hostility these people have for each other. You know, within the Democratic Party, you have the left and the blue dogs. Within the Republican Party, you have the mainstream and the Tea Party, and there are people who are pro and con against the president, and this combination has not worked to help federal workers. Washington Post today, I believe, has one of the columns has an analysis of the press releases that came out from Harry Reid's office, from John Boehner's office, and from the White House and whatnot. And there's some real vicious stuff in there, and what do they call it? Taunting.
Mm-hmm. What is interesting to me is that what you're saying is exactly correct, and yet in the aftermath of it, some of the news stories that I'm seeing today indicate that the chiefs of staff who did the negotiating for the Speaker, John Boehner, for Senator Reid, and also for the White House, they all seem to work together well. So maybe there's a little bit of hope there.
It could be. It's the principles. I mean, you see political rhetoric and posturing all the time, but I just really get the sense that when Boehner and Reid stand beside each other, they can barely stand it. I mean, they don't touch me. You
exactly.
Know? That they really don't like each other and all of the principal players, whereas the chiefs of staff, if that's true, and it must be to get some consensus. And these guys are professionals too. They're not running for office. They're serving people who run, but mm-hmm. these are pros, and they're told to get as much as you can or give up as little as you can, and let's go on with it. So that's a good analysis too.
It struck me too that's kind of a parallel to what goes on at the agencies. You have the political appointees, the equivalent of the speaker and the majority leader and so on, who are kind of the front men and women for the organization, and then you have the career folks who are the ones that the politicals say go and make something actually
happen.
That's
right. And you in every agency and department, there's somebody, the assistant secretary who runs the place,
mm-hmm.
Assistant Secretary for Administration, and the principal, and say, take the State Department, the Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton, she spends a lot of time traveling, as one would expect, as Secretary of State. Secretary of Defense, head of the Justice Department, they spend a lot of time on Capitol Hill. Some would say too much. Every committee wants a piece of the action, so they're constantly prepping for that. So somebody, both career and political, has got to know how the place runs and run it.
Mm-hmm. The term show horse is usually used in Washington as a term of denigration, and in this case, I don't mean it that way, but that's kind of what we have here. We have the folks who are out front who are conveying the message And then you have the folks who are the workhorses behind the scenes who are actually getting it done. I mentioned the lesson to take away from this for Mr. and Miss or Mrs. Federal employee is be prepared because this could happen again. The concept of that is not as easy, the concept of that is a lot easier to talk about than the actual execution of it. As you mentioned, it's not simple to just decide, oh, well, I'll just stick back a couple of $10,000 or $20,000 or $50,000 or more. Mm. But having a pad of some sort, for folks who were looking at maybe not getting a paycheck for a while certainly wouldn't be a bad place to be.
And you know, another thing too, it might be, just building on something you said, it might be good to look at this as not a shutdown fund as such, not a furlough fund as such, but just a general emergency fund. There was a good piece on television last night, and I've seen the theme before, but it's talking about the what-if thing. What if there's a disaster? What if there's a terrorist attack? And they used Washington for the terrorist attack, and I think it was a relatively small 10-kiloton, I'm probably going to get this wrong, nuclear device that was mm-hmm. smuggled in a truck down by the Capitol and detonated, and it showed what the damage would likely be depending on the winds. And they're talking about if you had one of the first things they do in a situation like this, and I hadn't thought about it, but when it goes off, you take care of the president, if it's in Washington, take care of the top government officials, you remove the wounded and whatnot, you evacuate people. But one of the first things you do is look for a second device,
mm-hmm.
which I had not thought of, to create maximum chaos. But they were saying, what would you do if you had to go a month without electricity?
Mm-hmm.
And what would you do if you had to go a month without food and water? So, you know, I don't want to sound like Glenn Beck here, but people should just be prepared for whatever happens.
The idea of being prepared in case this happens again at some point is it's one of those things that people don't want to think about. And yet it's something that we do need to think about because we're looking at a very contentious, potentially, because of what you said earlier, a very potentially contentious 2012 budget cycle where we could find ourselves back in this whole thing all over again at the end of September.
Yeah, and this raising the spending limit, you know, this thing that happens, is the U.S., is it conceivable that the U.S. would default on its debts or it would decide which ones to default on? Now, you know, talking about the contingency thing, without making this a gloom and doom deal, but after the tsunami in Japan and the attendant problems, I have a friend who's a nuclear engineer, and he predicted exactly what was going to happen. He could have written the script. Mm-hmm. He said, this boiler's going to go, this is going to go, and this is going to happen. But I told my kids, and I bought them some, and I urged them to buy more, but I said, go out and buy bottled water. You need it anyhow. You should always have it on hand for any kind of emergency. But what if there is a scare and somebody says the fallout has drifted over the U.S. and our water is slightly contaminated or has higher levels of radiation? What are you going to do mm-hmm. then? You know, you have to have done it before the event takes
yeah.
place.
And the point of this conversation is not to get people alarmed about somebody blowing a bomb off in Washington, but to get you to try to think ahead and be prepared for any variety
right.
of
and
different
not
kinds
just
of
one
contingencies.
Scenario again, because yeah. if you say whatever, pick one, or pick an earthquake, you get prepared. We say, well, an earthquake's not going to happen in this part of the country. This is not the New Madrid fault. We're not on the San Andreas fault. So, but think disaster, something that you could be a Teamster strike, could be anything that's disruptive. Just have a kit.
Mm-hmm. As you're thinking about money stuff and benefit stuff, one of the things that you covered last week very well in the wake of a potential shutdown was the idea that FEHBP is still going to be rolling along. That's not something people have to worry about. We talked about the emergency fund last week, about the idea of getting 6 months of expenses
yeah,
together
luck.
In 2 days.
Yeah.
But that planning process does require some forethought. It requires a little bit of insight and initiative because you have to not only figure out a plan, but then have to act on it a little bit. We're going to talk to Tom Trabucco from the TSP later on in the program today and find out what he's thinking about how all of this affects people who maybe are trying to pull money out or make changes or whatever. But all of these things just... I guess the message I'm trying to get across to people is you just don't know what could happen next. and at least be thinking about it. And it, this stuff needs to be on your radar screen instead of the poor folks being like the poor folks that we had emailing us and calling us and so on last week saying, geez, this could happen in 2 days and I had no idea.
I think there are some people, and there may be a psychological condition for it. I used to know someone, a relative, an older female relative, and she, well, actually they were sisters, and neither one of them wanted to fasten their seatbelt. And it wasn't because they had heard things like it'll snap your neck or do something. They just didn't want to entertain the thought of having a car wreck.
Right.
So to them, the act of putting a seatbelt on, I think, guess was an admission that you might have an accident. And that's not a good way to go through life.
No. What should we be paying attention to, do you think, over the next couple of weeks, months?
Well, of course, we got the CR. It was a six-day continued CR, and it goes through whenever. It was Friday night.
Yeah, Thursday night.
There's supposed to be the whole one. I think this thing about raising the debt limit could get very nasty and again, kind of stall the government or hold it hostage for a while. It's inconceivable to me that they would not raise the limit. It's never happened that they have not. But, this has been a wild couple of years.
That's a whole nother wrinkle, too, because that can't close the government down. It can't cause a shutdown, but it certainly could cause a slowdown, from my understanding, to make people once again kind of sit here. I mean, we've been going the last 2 or 3 weeks where everybody's treading water. I call up people and say, like to have you come on the radio and talk about X. Well, we're not sure. There might be a shutdown and we're not going to schedule it. And so everybody's kind of in a holding pattern.
Yeah.
And this is going to potentially cause that holding pattern to come back if that rolls
and
on.
It could hurt the economy, and that hurts everybody indirectly too.
Mm-hmm. All right, Federal News Radio senior correspondent Mike Causey, you're working up at another great column for tomorrow. We'll look forward to that. Any secrets about what's going to be in there tomorrow?
Well, it's what do you do? What does it do to your ego when you find out you're not essential? what happens?
And I explored that with Sally Katzen, who was at OMB during the last shutdown last week, and it was an angle I'd never really thought of before to be told I'm not essential. And I saw a number of folks on Facebook posting that they had found out Friday afternoon, well, I guess I'm not essential. I didn't think it would be nearly the blow to somebody's ego that it turns out that it really was.
Well, and I think a lot of them too, the several of the people that I heard from said, this is going to give the TV late night people grist for their mill. How many of us are not essential? And I must say, I was surprised. I was talking with the Federal Times guys too, Steve Watkins and Steve Losey. We were talking about this, and I think we all assumed that there would be fewer people this time declared non-essential, or whatever the word is, not accepted, than there were in the 95-96 thing, because the nature of the government has changed. Mm-hmm. You have so many more important jobs in national defense, national security, health, safety, law enforcement.
Yeah.
So we were all assuming it'd be a relatively small pool of people, but it's 800,000, the same as it was in the 95-96 thing. And that really surprised me, and I think it hurt some people's feelings.
Well, it was fascinating because some of the agencies would have been virtually closed. Mm-hmm. I mean, completely closed.
Yeah.
And yet there were some that would have still been operating at 70-75% capacity.
Yeah, and you wonder which is worse.
Yeah.
If all of your colleagues are home, fine, you can email each other. But if 70% of the people are working and you go home and tell your husband or wife, well, they don't really need me, not a good feeling.
Excellent.